This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, May 15th. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today as we have a discussion about mental health. It's a serious topic, right? And in order to have this conversation happen, I have Dr. Juliet Storr here with me, who is doing something interesting, I thought, about a journey. A journey of Bahamians and how they deal with something tragic. He said, something tragic. He said, what are you talking about? I'm talking like something like Hurricane Dorian. I'm talking about something like COVID-19, the depression that follows it, right? And I said, I remember sitting in the house alone, lonely, during COVID-19, right? And then I remember Hurricane Dorian and being petrified. I don't know what I understand. This is hurricane season, and I am petrified that this hurricane season may be violent, disastrous. So I could only imagine what people in Abaco, Grand Bahama, is going through, right? So I have Dr. Juliet Storr, who's here, who's doing a research-type paper about disaster mental health. And I could bring her on so she could correct me with the right words, right? Because she found it necessary that because it's hurricane season about to start, June 1st is right around the corner, right? That we need to document what has happened or what is happening with those who went through such a disastrous time. But without further ado, let me introduce Dr. Juliet. Is Juliet or Judith?
Juliet
Storr, mind you, I know a long time too, right? And explain who you are, and then we go into the project that you do, especially regarding Hurricane Dorian and the impact it has on Bahamians in general, especially their mental capacity.
All right, so as Ms. Nuri said, I am Juliet Storr, Dr. Juliet Storr, Professor Juliet Storr, Juliet Storr, whichever of those identities you know me as. I am a professor, a communications professor at Penn State, recently retired emerita, and I am focusing my research on disaster mental health. As the host introduced this program or project, it is really focusing on what happens long term after a natural disaster like a Hurricane Dorian or a COVID-19. In terms of looking at the psyche, the human psyche, the impact on the human psyche long term. How are people coping with long-term trauma in terms of PTSD, depression, anxiety, and any number of mental challenges that they face? COVID-19 came after Hurricane Dorian. But let me back up a bit. Hurricane Dorian was described by many people as a war zone. And those of you who are familiar with images of war or war veterans, you will know that PTSD is something that they often talk about having experienced war. And it is something that lasts for a lifetime. It's not a one-time thing. So I wanted to present to this country the stories, the human stories, to humanize disaster mental health. What does that look like? What it is when we talk about disaster mental health or mental health in general? I know culturally we have a lot of myths about mental health, a lot of stereotypes, some of the stigma that we still have. But I wanted to address this area because it's a growing concern globally. It's not just the Bahamas, though we are at the forefront, along with other small developing countries, of the climate change in terms of the impact of climate change. And so Hurricane Dorian was, if nothing else, a warning that we need to focus on what happens to the human soul or the human psyche having survived a Category 5. This project is known as Dorian Category 6. And we deliberately chose 6 because Hurricane Dorian was really more than a Category 5. And the next category is 6, though the debate is ongoing as to why it was not categorized as a 6, even though in terms of wind speed, it was a Category 6 with more than 187 miles per hour winds at some of the height of its impact. And so can you imagine the damage that was done to people? We saw the physical damage, but now imagine that physical damage on the inside of someone's mind, having experienced that. We saw the debris, we saw the damage, we saw the homes, we heard the stories of floodwaters that took away people's loved ones, children being ripped out of the arms of their parents, fathers, mothers, people losing their entire family. And now put yourself in their shoes to imagine what that looks like on a day-to-day basis, having gone through such a traumatic experience. Life is never the same. And so we have to work with the Bahamian public to help us understand that we can help those who have gone through these traumatic experiences. We can help people deal with mental challenges, depression, anxiety. We can help ourselves because we've all experienced COVID-19, which I said gave a double whammy, or it was like it exacerbated what had happened after Hurricane Dorian. And so in terms of the overall impact, we can never really sit and put a figure or a percentage or on what is life like as a survivor of Hurricane Dorian and COVID-19.
And Dr. Storr, people's personal stories are important.
Very much so.
And I find that we tend to just overlook it. You went through it, tough it up. Yeah. We all be into it. It's not significant, right? And I see you took the opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to do this research. Because I thought we was going to just skim over this and say, well, it's gone.
No.
It's gone. Why are you concentrating on this? Why is there a need to record this grief? Mm. And I'll put that question to you. Why is it important to even record this?
These are our stories of our people. Our family, our friends, the citizens of this country. If we want productive human beings in this country, climate change is not when we have the next storm. Climate change is very real. We are going to have more storms, more hurricanes like Category 6 Hurricane Dorian. I'm deliberately using Category 6 because that is what it was. And if we don't prepare ourselves mentally for the damage that takes place in the human psyche once you've gone through a traumatic loss, then we are not going to be as productive as we possibly can be. We have a growing concern, or we have growing concerns about mental health globally. Climate change has been identified as one of the factors that will increase mental health illnesses. All of the recent research is pointing to that. And so you're going to have more people who are mentally damaged. And we have to prepare as a country for that. We have to tell these stories because they are our stories. They are our stories. And we need to tell them ourselves. Others have come. They've documented Hurricane Dorian. Some have documented some of the tragedy and the impact on people. But we have powerful stories for the world. These are our stories told by us, for us, by us. And these are the things that we need to listen to, watch. People won't really empathize until they can visualize. And when you can visualize, you begin to feel more the pain and the suffering of those who have gone through and are still going through mental disorders or mental challenges or PTSD, anxiety, fear. When it rains, even when it's cloudy, people are responding to these in terms of the fear that they still feel. I've had a lot of the people who I've interviewed in pre-production talk about not being able to function sometimes. They literally have to pack up and go home if they're at work, or they stay inside, they break down, they find things to comfort them, whether that's some kind of substance or some other, we find ways to cope.
Coping mechanism. I want to talk about that, but I want to explore the word mental health. It's a buzzword now.
It is.
Especially in the Bahamas, I see our Prime Minister mention that we're going to take mental health seriously during programs. It's a buzzword worldwide.
It's a buzzword.
Apparently, it's a big thing, or they see in trends, and that we need to take the word and the illness serious enough that they're concentrating on it. It's something constantly used, right? And I want to ask you, why is that? Is there something that we should be on the lookout for? Especially we behaviors, we tend to be detached, right? They say, but we all go through trauma, but it's not something to harp on. Yeah. But clearly, the world thinks that this is something to harp on.
Yeah. Because it's connected to everything we do. As humans, mental is just as important as physical. We talk about all the physical ailments of the body, whether it's disease of the heart, whether it's cancer, but we tend not to focus on mental health, but it's just as important. It's at the core of who we are, because if you are not functioning mentally, then you won't function at all. And so, yes, I know it's a buzzword, and I'm hoping that people move beyond the buzz, that it's not just because it's the in thing or the latest trend, whether it's based on global research or statistics, or whether it's just something that people feel that it is something that we can now talk to the public about because it seems to be the latest it. People aren't just the latest PR story. People are hurting in this country from the length and breadth. And people who have gone through natural disasters like Hurricane Dorian and previous hurricanes, we often just focus on Hurricane Dorian because of the amount of damage that it did. Mm-hmm. It's historic in terms of its impact. But we've had other hurricanes, Jane, Irma, all of these hurricanes that have impacted people. And if you go through the length and breadth of this country where people who have survived hurricanes, they will tell you that they too still can recall some of the trauma that they went through, what they feel. I've talked to people who have survived hurricanes not only in the Bahamas, but also in the United States. They survived Hurricane Dorian only to go to New Orleans, where the latest storm also impacted them last year. And they were survivors. And they talk about how they were impacted by that, having gone through a Dorian, that they were even more traumatized.
How important it is to talk about this, hash it out, talk to someone about it. And I want to recall a story, right? I remember Abaco. This gentleman is a barber. I'm trying to remember it. And he was holding on to his loved one, right? And a debris came and snatched his entire hand off.
Yes, I heard.
And swept away his loved one. Gone. Yeah. Disappeared. Never found again. Swept out to sea.
Yeah, exactly.
And how something like that impacts a person. Surely just talking about it isn't adequate.
No.
Got to be more. Right?
No. And this is one of the things we want to emphasize too, that we also have to focus on resources for these people. The people who have survived, we can talk to them, we can listen to them, because listening is more important than talking. Let them tell their stories to you. And not everyone is going to tell their story, because some people are re-traumatized by telling their stories. So we have to find, in this country, we have to create the kind of resources that people need. There have been a lot of people who are focusing on building these resources, Bahama Psychological Association, who is partnering with us in this effort, in this project, is also very much in the played an important role in the recovery, the mental recovery of survivors of Hurricane Dorian and people who were first responders. Because we forget that it's not just those who immediately were impacted by the hurricane, but people who went to help. The first responders are also, many of them are also still traumatized. So what do we do? How do we help people? We have limited resources when we look at our mental health facilities, mental health professionals, and if you go through the islands, in some of the islands, there's no one. And so when we think about building facilities like shelters, we need to think about building capacity in terms of human professionals who can help when this actual event takes place, that they are all on the ground, they have been trained. And this is something Bahama Psychological Association has been working with to try to create in terms of building these kinds of, when we say capacity, the resources where people have been trained throughout the length and breadth of the country, because we don't know where the next hurricane will land, and that they are there to counsel, to help people once the storm has passed. And they're there permanently. It's not that they are there for a short period of time, because that's what happened with Dorian as well. A lot of mental health experts, both from the Bahamas and externally, came and they went to the islands of Abaco and Grand Bahama, and also some of them were here in New Providence because a lot of the people who were displaced relocated here. But once the storm and the impact of the storm moved out of the headlines, professionals left, those who were here. And one of the survivors told me that she actually was engaged in terms of getting counseling from a professional who came to the country to help in this area, looking at how to help those cope with the stress and the depression and the anxiety and the trauma, the PTSD that they will experience. And she said she felt much better, but after a period of time, that individual had moved on. So the expert that she was receiving help from left the country. She lost contact with her. And so now she has no one. And she's still trying to cope with the long-term impact of her PTSD on her and her daily life.
And Dr. Starr, before we transition as to who are the stakeholders in your project, right? And again, to rehash and define the objective of your project, right? You mentioned safe spaces. And you, in this program, creating a safe space. I remember a story again during Dorian, when there were a group of people who went to a hurricane shelter, or who they thought was listed as a hurricane shelter, a safe space, as like you put it. And the roof collapsed, killing two dead. 1 minute, you're next to your loved one, say, we are safe as we battle this storm. And the roof collapsed, and you were just happened, God have mercy on you, to be to the left. And then you realize your mother, who's on the right, is no longer here. I can't be safe after that. Exactly. There's no such thing as a safe place after that. When you start thinking about shelters and hurricane shelters, how can I feel safe in the shelters you designate to me and the roof collapsing, right? And I know you speak about mental health, but how does one deal with that, the anxiety about that, moving into another hurricane season? Right? But now I want to know about your partners.
Okay. So
who all is involved inside this?
So we have a growing list of partners. I've mentioned one already, Bahama Psychological Association. When I came to them with the project, they immediately jumped on board, wanted to partner with us because they were doing this work already. They were already in the space of disaster mental health. And so over the last year and a half, we have also partnered with Rotary Bahamas, who one of the organizations that were instrumental in providing resources to survivors of Hurricane Dorian in particular, working with other organizations. They rebuilt and are still rebuilding a lot of homes in many of the islands that were impacted, Abaco and Grand Bahama and some of the Keys. And so they also are on board. We also have recently partnered with PAHO, which is Pan American Health Organization, in terms of they are going to provide resources for us in helping us look at the special needs of the Bahamas and the Caribbean at large, some of the statistical information that's out there about climate change and its impact on the Bahamas and the Caribbean. We've also, we're partnering with the new DMA, I think it's REC, the Disaster Management Authority, who are now folded in with NEMA and DRA, who are also on board with the project because this is Disaster Preparedness Month, and they also want us to focus on the disaster mental health side of Disaster Preparedness Month because we're doing this project. We've also reached out to the Ministry of Health, the Minister of Health in particular, the Prime Minister's office, and another of other stakeholders. We have some funding. The project is a documentary, docu-series. And if you're familiar with documentary or filmmaking in particular, you know it's costly. Mm-hmm. And so we have raised some funds. We have one major donor who has given us a matching fund, $50,000. We have to match that so that we can get access to that fund. And so a part of our campaign is not only awareness of the project, but also reaching out to the public for donations, for sponsorship, for support in any kind. You can do that by going to our website. We have a website, which is www.categoryd6.com. You can find information about the project. You can also donate to someone who you know in memory of that person or tribute to an organization that assisted in recovery efforts during Hurricane Dorian, who did a phenomenal job in terms of assisting people in terms of rescue efforts. I don't want to call names because I've interviewed some of these people. But if you're listening and you know of these people and you feel that they should get some recognition, please go to the website and donate in their name, in the organization's name. No donation is too small. $1, $2, $5, $1,000, $5,000, $50,000, whatever you feel that you can give, we are accepting because we want to do the production this summer. We need to capture these stories. As I said, these are our stories. They are powerful stories. The Bahamas could be a case study for other countries. You know, the Prime Minister has been talking about climate change and its impact on us in terms of us being a small island developing state and what it means to be at the forefront of the impact of climate change. We are unfortunately in Hurricane Alley or Hurricane Zone, and so we are always going to have to be ready. And that means we need resources and we need the help of also looking at our own environment in terms of what can we do to prepare ourselves. I'll give you one example of one of the persons I've interviewed who was in the medical field. This is a physician who worked in Abaco at the clinic. And then she relocated along with her husband here to Nassau. And she says she is still frightened to this day whenever she steps outside her home and she drives from her home to wherever she's now, the clinic or to the hospital. And all she can see as she's taking that journey is projectiles that would injure, maim, kill. And we take it for granted when we have stuff lying around our homes, on the outside, an old truck, a car, tire, whatever. A dump tin. We just leave these things in our communities without realizing that they are weapons, that these are the things that kill people during Hurricane Dorian. These are the things that we don't pay attention to. So when we talk about mental preparedness. We want to make sure that you're doing that kind of inventory of your physical as well as your mental in terms of your environment and your state of mind, and knowing that we need to do something about the way that New Providence looks. And those are things that we don't want to talk about, but we are part of this in terms of getting us to talk about what are some of the challenges we face as a country with the increase in these kinds of hurricanes, stronger weather, faster, more intense. Well, how are we preparing in everyday conversations?
I'm going to bring in Roxy into this, right? She's accompanying you, and she's
yes.
basically involved in the marketing and promotion of the entire project. But she, her home, when you grew up, what do you call it?
It's a childhood home.
Her childhood home yeah. was completely destroyed yeah. in Hurricane Dorian, right? And we talk about mental health and how that impacts you. Can you imagine you grew up in a house mm-hmm. and the house is no more?
Yes. I can. Actually, I don't have to imagine.
But what does that mean? Reality. And how does that impact you? Like you driving your own neighborhood and say, boy, I used to live there.
Mm-hmm. So the thing for me is, good morning, Bahamas. So the thing for me is we look at the mental health of certain trauma and sometimes you've been prepared to see this trauma repeated. So for my grand Bahamian, my Freeport people, we remember back to Francis and Jean. That's the first time I experienced my home being flooded out. It didn't completely implode by water, but my home was flooded out. We were without power for 6 months. I remember my uncle, Cleveland Duncan, preparing to jump in the boat to come and get us out of the eastern side of the island. So experiencing that trauma is what made my father leave the house during Dorian and not stay home. Had he stayed home, I would have lost my dad and I would have lost my stepmom along with the home. There was absolutely no way to survive what happened inside my home. No possible way. If you go to the website, you'll see a video clip. And in this video clip, you can hear me speaking. And the home that you see in the video clip is my home. It looks like a bomb was dropped in the middle and the walls were imploded outward.
What's this website?
www.categoryd6.com.
Okay.
The website talks about the project and highlights some of the stories and, you know, gives you the ability to donate. But mentally, a lot of people focused on the loss of life, which is absolutely important and irreplaceable. But we also forget that grief shows in so many different forms, losing something that you've worked so hard for. I was a child in that home as it was built. Like, I remember being there with the contractors driving nails through the wood. I remember taking the little round circle things that come out of the electrical box that you put in the wall and realizing that I could put them in the candy machine and get candy out. You know, I didn't just grow up in this home. I grew with this home from the ground up. This was my inheritance. This was the first place my daughter left to spend a vacation without me after she was born. This is where I graduated high school. This was where I, you know, had my first little boyfriend I was sneaking to talk to on the phone. This was where I took the worst cut up of my life. This was when my dad told me he was disappointed in me. This is when my mom told me that she loved me and my mom was not emotional. So those type of memories, I can't replace them in the home. I know that the third tile from the door was cracked because I crack it. Mm. I know that the water, if you don't jiggle the handle in the guest room toilet, you can get cut up because it can keep leaking. Mm-hmm. I know these things about my home, and those are the things that can't be replaced. You could build a structure back, but you're not able to build that experience back again. I mean, I could always go crack the tile again, but my mommy and you had to cut my hip for it. Mm. So it ain't gonna be the same cracking the tile.
So you're experiencing some grief, some loss.
Yes, a lot of loss, a lot of grief. Mm. Just from that. And then I worked closely with those civilians that were on the ground in the midst of Dorian trying to perform rescues. So I was getting voice notes forwarded from family members screaming and the horror that they were experiencing and saying, please send someone to get us. We ain't gonna make it much longer. We're not gonna live through this. Please send someone to get us. The water to our neck. We can't swim. We holding the baby above our head. This our pin location. I was in the thick of it. So I heard these firsthand experiences, not after, but in real time. Mm-hmm.
And the hopelessness of not being able to help.
And not being able to help because I sitting home inside my house, my apartment on Cowpen Road, and all I getting is a breeze. Mm-hmm. So I'm now even having this sense of the equivalent of a survivor's guilt, because why I ain't home? Why I ain't there helping my neighbor? I got a call from my neighbor's niece, who's my best friend, saying Annie Indy in the roof and they can't get out. And I can't do nothing. And it also speaks to a lot of people who had family, who experienced the mental health aftershock from seeing their family in hopeless states that they can't do much for. If I could build you a house, I'd build you a house. But I'm suffering too financially, so I can't even do as much as I would want to do. But now I'm going to open my home up to you. This is the best I can. But now I'm listening to you wake up in the middle of the night screaming. I'm listening to the rain falling on the roof and you having a panic attack and shaking, and I can't do anything for you. This doesn't just affect those who directly survived Dorian or any major catastrophe. There's the survivor adjacent avenue that we don't talk about. There are people who didn't live in Abaco, didn't live in Grand Bahama, but they had family there and lost their entire families. Mm-hmm. These are the things we're not talking about. And I can tell you, 4 years ain't no time. My mom died 13 years ago, and I still can't bring myself to celebrate Mother's Day, her birthday, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And I was, I wouldn't say prepared to lose my mother, but I knew that she was sick. Mm-hmm. I knew that this was a real possibility. You don't, I mean, they always just say this is where God vacations, and we've been blessed over the years when it comes to hurricanes for what it could have been. But Dorian showed us that climate change is real. And we got to stop saying, oh, I can just stay in my house and ride it out with God. No. We have to really prepare for what could happen. And we're not doing that mentally. A lot of us ain't even doing it physically. But just the mental side of it is not preparing us for what's to come next.
Ms. Storr, Dr. Storr, mm-hmm. Closure. I remember a video clip of a funeral mm-hmm. in Abaco. I remember seeing a grave as we with nameless, no name on it, just a grave. And families who the funeral supposed to be for, their families, were on the outskirts, could not come and be a part of the closure. They were not included. They were not considered. No, they have no closure because there's no, and the African tribe I embrace, Igbo, right? We have this thing we say their name of the ancestors, yeah. Right? Give them life. That's where you live for eternity. You always should be telling the story, say their name, right?
Ashe.
And there has been no ceremony of calling names, of giving life or worth to those people who who's missing still, that's gone. Just know they're gone. I tell you my loved one gone. There's no body to attach to say I had a funeral for them. Yeah. There is no name calling to give them life and respect and honor. And they say, man, get over it.
Yeah, resilient. We're very resilient. Everybody keeps saying how resilient we are. And yes, human
beings. But do that make damaged people? Are we damaged people?
Yes, we are. We are damaged. And we are resilient as human beings, but it does not mean that we are not going to experience trauma for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So I think we need, as a society, to reimagine what trauma really looks like, mm-hmm. having survived Hurricane Dorian. What you're talking about in terms of just the recognition of my loved one being lost, by calling their name as a national way of mourning, of helping me mourn collectively. I think because one of the other things that came out of the interviews is most people in some of the other islands, particularly New Providence, felt as though that happened in Abaco, that happened in Grand Bahama. Okay, people have helped them, we've moved on. Mm-hmm. And that's not true.
I sent a box of things over there. I finished with that.
I volunteered at a shelter. I gave out food and water. You know, my family lived with me for a period of time. And we all made adjustments. We're not diminishing anything that people did. But we have to remember that trauma like that lasts a lifetime. a lifetime. It just doesn't go on. And collectively, as a country, we were all traumatized because, as you pointed out, we all had to make adjustments, whether we were adjacent in some way to the Dorian impact of Dorian in some way, whether we had family that moved in with us, we had to make adjustments. And those are things that some people never got to talk about.
Dr. Stowe, I have a phone call there. Producer, just hang up. Sorry about that, caller. You can call back, and I'd be happy to let you. The caller called back again. Patch them through again. Going through right now. So as the producer, patch them through and guide them through. I wanted to talk about the phases, because I heard that your project has different phases. I'm not sure what phase you are now. Mm-hmm. But go through the phases of what your project going through.
So we are in production. There's the pre-production phase. And so we are wrapping up pre-production. But we cannot start production until we have the remainder of the funding to actually produce. Part of the funding also is for the other part of the project, which is community engagement. So that part of the project is geared towards changing the culture around mental health and helping people also talk about their own mental health challenges, whether they're looking at what happened to them in COVID-19 or anything that traumatized or stressed or depressed them, anxiety that people are feeling. The U.S. just had a recent study last week or a week and a half ago talking about loneliness, and loneliness has been number one. So what are some of the mental health challenges we have here in this country? And so the community engagement part of this project is designed to get people in the country talking about mental illness and doing it from a healthy space, understanding that this is like any other health issue or crisis that we face. As humans, we must talk about these so that we can address them, we can find the resources to help people, and that people can become whole, productive human beings again.
Okay, let me see if I can patch that caller through now. A producer, patch them through now for me. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Pleasure. Good morning, Mr. Dury.
Good morning to you.
You know, this trauma thing, a lot of people, I'm listening to your guest. This trauma, see, I can tell you from personal experience, it just lasts like a lifetime. Yesterday was another Mother's Day, and we still remembering Dorian, the pandemic. Like, the whole world has changed. Our lifestyle and the way we think has changed. I'm 72 years old, May 4th, just gone. My mother passed away when I was a 15-year-old boy. Still to this day, when Mother's Day comes around, and I'm wishing all kind of friends of mine happy Mother's Day and everything, I can't celebrate Mother's Day. When I hear certain songs, tears just, they just drain down my eyes. Yesterday was a difficult day, although I wear out around people was having a good time, parties, just a drinking that and so forth. Then another thing, Mr. Nuri, the hurricane, we live in New Providence. We did not witness what happened, but most of us saw scenes, like you said, on television. Air shots from what the place, how it was devastated in Abaco and Grand Bahama. And we were hardly touched in New Providence, not a little rain and breeze. My plywood was put up from last year around my house. I have not taken them down yet. And before you know it, Mr. Nuri, they're whispering in our ears, get ready. Next, in a few days, in 16 days, it'll be the start of hurricane season. They already predicted how many hurricanes they expect, what can turn into hurricanes, but guess what? All of the out islands from Magona and Elutra and all of those have been hit by hurricanes. Luckily enough, New Providence has seemed to be up the middle. For some God-blessed reason, where most of the population live, we haven't been touched. But listen to this. The governments of this country have built a lot of these government houses in these subdivisions. We know in this country that a lot of these shady contractors and stuff is cut the double rules. And we don't know, because we have not been tested, if they have completely built our roofs to standard or not because we have not been tested by a hurricane. Should a devastating hurricane hit New Providence like it hit Abaco, an island only 21 by 7, with shanty towns all around us, and houses built in Mason tradition and off East Street from back in the 20s, you can imagine what could happen to the Bahamas if the population is impacted like Dorian, if New Providence is hit, which shelter we could go to? Where can we go to? Can we go to Florida? What would we do in New Providence if these roofs that we bought from the government are not built to standard and just fly off while we're in there and in the middle of plywood and all this kind of thing, roofs just disappear? Have we thought about this? Have these contractors were they really investigated that they did the work properly? We don't know. We don't have no idea, Mr. Dury, until that hit us.
You're absolutely right. And that is something we must consider moving forward in terms of building a hurricane shelter. How urgent is it? Because I know they've been talking about building one in Abaco. And the operative word there is talking about building one in Abaco, right? But let's talk about the project. You chose to be a docu-series.
Yes.
Exactly what is a docu-series, just in case the listening audience aren't aware. And why did you decide to do a docu-series in general?
All right, and I'll fold in a couple of the things that the caller said, because what he said is very important. But the docu-series, or a docu-series, is really a documentary with various lengths or different types. So feature documentary usually can be anywhere from an hour to two, sometimes three. And that's a feature-length film. And then you have the shorter versions, like the short films, that would be anywhere from sometimes 5 minutes to as much as 40, 45 minutes in various lengths. Now, the reason why we chose this is because we cannot put everything in a documentary. And so we want to add to the documentary with the shorter films that look at various topics under this very broad topic, as disaster mental health is a pretty broad topic.
Good. So we'll explore that some more after this break. We're going to take a short break right now. We're talking to Dr. Juliet Starr. We're talking... Roxy, I don't even know your last name anymore. Sorry.
You could use Starr.
Roxy Starr? Oh, that's right. Okay. We're talking about mental health, especially with disaster preparedness, mental health in Bahamas. And Bahamas Psychological Association is partnering with this. And we're talking about disasters and how we cope with it, right? And this docu-series that they're planning. But we'll be right back to just go in more detail about it. Guardian Radio in the Air.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone. What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. And I'd like to thank Sparky for that last call. It was a sobering call, right? Especially when he mentioned, what if it had happened to New Providence, Nassau? We would have been climate refugees. The deaths that happened in Abaco and Grand Bahama, the destruction that had happened in Abaco and Grand Bahama, if that storm had passed directly over New Providence and sat as it did over Abaco, Nassau, New Providence, would have been gutted.
Yes.
We would have more likely had to leave New Providence and find someplace else to go.
Exactly.
And moving to one of the family islands wouldn't be adequate, wouldn't be the solution. No. We would have found ourselves as climate refugees.
Yes, we would.
The debris that are on our streets that we take casually, say, man, these people are just nasty, would have become missiles, weapons, debt markers. And would have destroyed and add to the debt tool.
Yeah.
Right? The fear, I can only imagine the fear and anxiety of that for persons who have moved from Abaco and Grand Bahama to come to New Providence to live.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And see, say, but all that I gone through and these people ain't learned yet that you can't have the garbage bin like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old car. Like that, that death right in there, and it's June 1st, and I see the death.
Exactly.
I remember the screaming. I remember the roofs and drowning in my rooftop because I could not escape to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has learned from my tragedy, what I went to, when I went through.
Yeah.
But Juliet's store, continue. Tell me more about your project, because I know we have a few more minutes now, and I need to know, how can we help you with this?
All right, so the goal, why is this important? I think we've said why throughout this program. And the caller also identified why. This is important because, as we said, climate change is real. And the impact of that on our mental health is also very real. The caller mentioned Mother's Day yesterday. Many survivors don't have their mothers because they lost them during Hurricane Dorian or COVID-19. You know, Roxy talked about her loss of her mother, her home. Now, it is important for us to think and talk about disaster mental health, to make sure we have the resources, indeed, if we are climate refugees. And so we want to make sure that we prepare or help people to prepare to survive future extreme weather events. And so we want to make sure that people can help us by doing this visually and support this project, donate, sponsor, shop. We have merchandise online as well as in person. We're wearing the t-shirts. And we also want you to volunteer because we're going to need assistance, particularly during the community engagement. We're physically going along with Bahamas Psychological Association to some of the islands that have been impacted by hurricanes, not just Dorian, to talk, to set up workshops, to exhibit the films, and to provide the resources there. So this is a big project. It's an ongoing project. It's a lifelong project. And we would like to make sure that we are able to complete it.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you. And of course, I'm able to bring you back to just to discuss this again.
Thank you.
This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Go to the news now. Have a wonderful day.